Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
When I say, can you dig it? Put your two hands up like that.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Can You Dig It, a podcast by SilverScreenAndRoll.com. I am Christian Rivas, joined by Jacob Rude, and we are here to talk about the postseason Lakers, because the play-in is the postseason. Let's just get that out of the way right now. If your team qualified for the postseason and had a playoff drought, it's over. Congratulations, you made it. The Lakers will go into the postseason as a number seven seed, which is another reason I'm just comfortable saying the postseason, because they're one of the eight teams. They would have made it anyway. Yeah, right now they're the number seven seed. They will play the number eight seed Golden State Warriors on Wednesday to be the number seven seed once and for all. Before we get into all of that, Jacob, how are you doing today?
It was a fun day. It was an exhausting day. Covering the Hornets and Wizards game earlier in the afternoon and the morning for West Coasters. I really enjoyed having all these games go off simultaneously. I hope that is something that also sticks around, because that made it fun with like the live updating. It didn't really matter as much in the East, because ultimately it kind of boiled down to whoever won that Wizards Hornets game was going to be the eighth seed, and the other team was probably going to be the 10th seed. But the Western Conference, everybody tipping off at the same time, made it really interesting with teams winning and losing and how that was dictating, because basically by the end of the night, the Lakers had realized that they're not going to move up. So they started pulling guys and stuff. So I enjoyed that, but it was a wild weekend with lots of action and just kind of exhausting to even just sit and watch, basically.
What's funny is, like, there was all this talk about, you know, the shuffling that could go on Sunday, and the implications of, you know, the Blazers potentially losing and then the Lakers winning. Only for the standings, at least in the Western Conference, to remain the same as they were from the day before. That's hilarious to me. And I agree. I would like to see all these games going on at one time. I hope that's here to stay. But also, like, the one game that Lakers fans were keeping their eye on was that Blazers-Nuggets game. And that got out of hand immediately.
Yeah, I was going to say, within seconds.
So maybe, you know, this year wasn't the best example in the Western Conference or the Eastern Conference, but generally speaking, I think it was a lot of fun. The Clippers, hats off to them for just they had already secured not seeing the Lakers in the first round, but just for safety, they lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder today and gave the Nuggets the number two seed. I don't know how I feel about any of these matchups in the Western Conference right now. Maybe it's just because they're on a five-game winning streak, and, you know, the Clippers losing, making it seem like, you know, they don't want to play the Lakers. Maybe it's all of these things that make me think anybody the Lakers play from here on out is hard to argue against the Lakers being the favorites. And I think that's especially true in the case of the Lakers-Suns series. But before that, before they can even get to a proper playoff series, they have to play Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors in a one-game series, at least against the Warriors. How are you feeling going into that game?
Before I go into that, because I do have some thoughts on it, the Clippers outright tanked these last two games. And I'm not really sure why it's a debate. I have many friends that are Clippers fans. I really don't understand why they're so defensive about it, because objectively, it was the smartest thing to do. Avoid the Lakers. This is not a normal seven seed. Like, if situations were flipped, the Lakers were in the top four, and say the Warriors were getting Klay Thompson back this year, and it's similar to how the Lakers did with LeBron, you would want to avoid the Warriors. Like, you would want none of that. So, like, they did the right thing by tanking. 100%, I'm going to get these jokes off. I don't care whether it was a smart thing or not. But after all the games tonight, I said it was objectively the smartest thing to do, but be careful messing with the basketball gods, because that can come back to bite you. And if there's any franchise that does not need to mess with the basketball gods anymore, you would think it would be the Clippers, but they're tempting fate here, because they maneuvered their way into a 4-5 matchup against a Mavericks team with Luka looking really, really good. And that's a really hot Mavericks team. But yeah, we'll talk about all that later. The 7-8 game. Listen, this could be old takes exposed in 3 days. Steph is phenomenal. He was phenomenal again on Sunday. Won the scoring title in style. I'm not worried about the Warriors. The Lakers have a history of being able to defend perimeter players really well, particularly last year in the playoffs. Steph is a different beast, but I mean, they handled Damian Lillard and they handled James Harden just fine. Now, if you want to make a counter argument, you can say it took them one game in each of those series to get the blueprint. And they aren't afforded one game to lose before they get the blueprint down. But nonetheless, I am interested to see how they defend him. But if there's one thing the Lakers have lots of, it's perimeter defenders, specifically guards, who can chase him around. So Steph is terrifying, but I'm not worried about the Warriors as a whole, because the rest of the team is just not very good. Draymond on some nights is, but the rest of the team, like, who's guarding it? I assume the Lakers, you can play big against them. So you're going to have LeBron, AD, and one of the centers. And who's guarding that? Like, Draymond can only guard one of those guys. So two of those guys are going to have the advantage. So, I've seen a lot of people worried about the Warriors. I want to give Steph as much credit as possible, but the rest of that team doesn't worry me nearly as much. There's a huge drop off from Steph and Draymond to everyone else.
The Lakers went 2-1 against the Warriors this year. Their first game against the Warriors, it was 115-113 in the Warriors' favor. That was on January 18th. LeBron James and Anthony Davis were both healthy for that one. And it is the only game the Lakers have played against the Warriors where LeBron James and Anthony Davis were healthy. In the games LeBron and AD weren't healthy, or at least just AD, you have February 18th against the Lakers. The Lakers won that game 117-91. And in the following game, again, without Anthony Davis, the Lakers won 128-97. So what I'm asking you is, are the Lakers a better team against the Warriors without Anthony Davis?
Are you suggesting we should bench Anthony Davis for, yeah, for that game?
Like picture what we did with JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard against the Rockets, but with Anthony Davis. The uproar that would cause.
I'm here for it. Vogel's earned his credit. Let's do it. No, it's interesting looking at that game where they were healthy. I mean, even in that game, Steph went 8 for 22 and was 3 of 12 from three. Kelly Oubre had 23 points, and he's, I believe, done for the season. Wiggins had 18. Eric Pascal had 19 off the bench. Goes literally directly against my idea that none of the other guys worry me because it was a lot of the other guys that did the damage. But no, like I said, Oubre's out. Pascal is just back from injury. Wiseman played that game and he's done for the season. I mean, that team has had a lot of turnover since that too. Brad Wanamaker played that game. He's done for the season, or he was traded. I mean, so that team looks a lot different than that game. I remember that game being incredibly frustrating, which understandably so, because they were outscored by 13 in the fourth quarter to lose. They had a big lead and basically blew it. It was, with LeBron and AD, probably the most frustrating loss of the season. But that was also when AD was hobbled, basically, or whatever the issue he was going through the first half of the season that led to those Draymond comments about, can't remember exactly how he worded it, but he's like, some superstar I won't name in really bad shape or something. And he, I mean, read between the lines, it was AD. So I don't know. I don't know how much you can even take away from that one game. Cause I mean, that was the 15th game of the season. That was so long ago. So much has changed for both these teams. So, and then obviously you really can't take a ton away from the games where AD didn't even play. So it's going to be interesting to see how they approach this game. I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to me because I think the game's going to look a lot more like these 128-97 score lines than it will the 115-113 one. Because I just don't think the Warriors are going to be able to get stops on the Lakers to really make up for, like, Steph is just going to have to score every time down because the Lakers are going to get a lot more easier buckets. But yeah, it's interesting looking at the season series because it was pretty much the opposite of what you would expect considering who we had available.
Right. And I think the general assumption when it comes to this Lakers-Warriors matchup is that the Lakers are going to win the battle in the front court. And I think that will be true because the Lakers are just so much bigger than the Warriors. And, you know, with all due respect to Draymond Green and Kevon Looney, much more skilled than both of those two. But Draymond Green and Kevon Looney are both really talented defensive big men. And, you know, at least for a little bit last season, it looked like the player that Anthony Davis struggled the most against were kind of those undersized, defensively talented big men like PJ Tucker. Didn't seem to have much problem for the rest of that Houston series, but at the beginning, it looked like that might be a problem for him. AD's moving really well right now. LeBron looked like he was really moving really well on Sunday. And though I think Andrew Wiggins is leaps and bounds a better player than he was last season, it just seems like he's figuring out how to play winning basketball and honestly just basketball in general. I've really enjoyed watching Andrew Wiggins this season, is what I'm saying. That being said, I don't know if he's the LeBron James stopper. I don't know if he's going to get a play-in MVP for holding LeBron James to 35 points per game or whatever Andre Iguodala got his for. I'm not stupid enough to say the Warriors won't win flat out because Steph Curry is just insane. I enjoy watching him probably more than I watch any basketball player in the league. And LeBron said that he thinks that Steph Curry is the MVP of the league. I don't know if I'd go that far, but
he's laying the foundation early.
The statistics certainly rival his MVP campaigns, which is nuts, because when you look at those seasons Steph had, you think, okay, well, that's a once in a lifetime season for any player. Like, he was just incredibly hot that season. Nobody will see a season from him like that again. And I get his usage percentage and his responsibility with this Warriors team is far greater than it was on any of those aforementioned dynasty Warriors teams. However, the fact that he's doing this again, he led the league in scoring, is just insane. And I really hope the Warriors are the team that ends up getting the eighth seed. I just hope that their playoff berth is not by way of beating the Lakers in a one game series.
By the straight definition of most valuable player, I think it would be Steph hands down. Like, I don't think any one person is more valuable to their team's success than Steph.
You don't think Jordan Poole would lead the Lakers or the Warriors to the number eight seed in the Western Conference?
He would try. I mean, he would certainly put up the shots to try, but no, I don't think he would. So, I mean, if you're just looking at it from that sense, I can understand that. I mean, team success probably factors into it. I mean, should team success, you think, factor into MVP voting?
Well, okay. I think to an extent it should, but generally speaking, I am in the camp of, would this team be as good as they are, even if it is just an eighth seed without this player? And not just would this team be good, like this good, how much did this player contribute to this team being this good? And that's why I always find it really interesting, even more so than like the player debate, is just the criteria of the MVP debate. Because I think, by that logic, Steph has a great argument. Julius Randle has a fantastic argument. And then Chris Paul, whose numbers aren't as flashy as the other two, him coming in and churning that franchise around into the number two seed in the Western Conference. Obviously, Monty Williams played a big role in that, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up with a Coach of the Year award at the end of the season. But by that metric, I think LeBron's probably onto something. But to be fair, by LeBron's metric, he is also in that conversation.
Yeah, that's fair. And we have literal evidence this year of how in the conversation he should be. That Julius Randle, I mean, you're 100% right on Julius Randle. He, like, I don't think it's out of the question that he's like top five in the MVP. He would probably be fifth in that. Like, you would have, I think Jokic probably is going to win the MVP, and it's fair. Like, he's really, really damn good. And that whole Denver offense runs through him. Embiid honestly probably would be the MVP if he didn't get hurt, which is, again, through kind of no fault of his own. Steph is up there. I would probably put Chris Paul fourth. But then after that, like, you're looking at, I think Julius Randle has like a legitimate case for being next in line, which is just wild. Like, I watched him a couple times down the stretch of the season between just covering games that teams played the Knicks and whatnot. And he, just the amount of contested jumpers he just buries. Like, I don't know how sustainable it is, but that he, I mean, he's done it the whole year, so I really don't know what more kind of sample size you need. I think he's a shoe-in for most improved player. Like, I don't even think that one's a debate. which will be 2 years running that a former Laker has won most improved player. I just find him, his season absolutely fascinating, but yeah, I mean, that the Lakers are going to have to go through Steph, who we just talked about how important he is to that team. I mean, it's going to be a tough task. We gave the examples from last season, but at the end of the day, neither of those guys were like MVP level good. So this is a step above your Dames and your James Hardens from last year. I mean, it was James Harden in the playoffs, so it wasn't that hard to stop him. He kind of takes himself out of it. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I will say I'm a lot more confident after this weekend of basketball from the Lakers. Like, did your confidence or comfort with this team change at all after this weekend?
I think seeing AD look as good as he's looked has boosted my confidence quite a bit. And I also think, and you know, what I'm going to say is similar to how I feel about LeBron James. I think what makes me feel the most confidence is that Anthony Davis has played all of these games, and not every time his Achilles tendinosis is mentioned or his calf strain is mentioned, he kind of plays it off and is like, you know, I haven't even thought about it since I returned, to be honest with you. And it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to look like it on the court, where it obviously isn't bothering him. And I don't know if his shooting touch is all the way there yet. I honestly don't know if LeBron's shooting touch is going to be all the way there. But, man, if the Lakers' backup plan with their two star players is just having them attack the rim relentlessly, there are few guys in the league I'd rather do that with. I mean, I guess Giannis and Embiid. Yeah. But I mean, LeBron and AD. If you don't have a team with Giannis and Embiid,
I think you'd settle for LeBron and AD. I was gonna say, I don't think there's any two teammates I would probably rather have. You'd literally have to form some type of super team to best those two. I was still pretty hesitant on just basically where LeBron was, because to go from not playing to, I mean, you're immediately in high intensity games. And he's talked in the past. I mean, if you remember last year, he's talked about kind of ramping his body up to that point in a season to be ready for the playoffs. So he went from not playing to coming back, and it clearly wasn't working. And then him immediately going back on the bench. Like, I was worried because there wasn't a lot of time to get it right. And I think from like a having comfort in LeBron standpoint, I don't think these two games could have went any better. Like, he's made multiple plays that you have to have a fully healed ankle to make those plays. Like, the flashy play was the alley-oop he had early in that Pacer game, that monster alley-oop. Like, he wasn't making that play a week and a half ago when he first came back from this injury. But I think the one that really sealed it for me was in Sunday's game when it was the first half. I don't remember specifically when, but he basically shot the gap on the passing lane, tipped the ball out in front of him, chased it down, fended off two Pelicans, and finished at the rim under control. Like, if his ankle isn't 100%, there's so many ways that play wouldn't have worked. He wouldn't have been able to shoot the gap. He wouldn't have been able to hold those guys off, and he wouldn't have been able to go up under control. So, but I think I, like probably literally every other Laker fan watching it at the end of the game, had a minor panic attack when he stepped on Nikhil Alexander-Walker's foot, because I typically am pretty calm in those situations. But when they showed the camera angle where he like laid his head on the ground and it just looked like he had a, oh God, I did it again face, I think it probably scared him more than anything, because he immediately jumped up and started testing his ankle out. And it I mean, when they showed him on the sideline laughing and whatnot, I kind of breathed a sigh of relief, and he immediately played it off post game. But I could not be more confident in LeBron and AD's health going into the playoffs now.
Which was the number one priority, and it was always going to be even more than seeding. I do think I maintain that seeding matters quite a bit, especially in the Western Conference this year. But I mean, if you're the Lakers, you have to like the at least the first two matchups you're getting. The Warriors and Suns in the Western Conference probably have one of the more ill-prepared like front courts to face the Lakers and wing depth. All due respect again to Andrew Wiggins and who do they got over in Phoenix? Mikal Bridges and Jay Crowder. Ah, listen, I would like the Lakers to win that first play-in game, because although I am in fear of putting any Laker in danger, I don't like Jay Crowder, and I would like the Lakers to beat his team.
I did not enjoy his antics in the finals last year, trying to yank guys' arms. I would happily like to beat him repeatedly. I was just trying to think. I think we discussed this previously, but I don't think there's a top four team that we match up better with than the Suns. I mean, we saw it when we didn't even have LeBron, AD, which, to be fair, AD had like an all-time game. But
yeah, he had all-time games in the postseason last season too.
Yeah, that's fair. Maybe we can just tell them they're back in the bubble or something. But yeah, I don't think there's a team they match up better with. Again, I don't want to put the cart ahead of the horse. We still have to win the play-in game, but assuming we do, that's not only a very favorable first round matchup, which pour one out for the Suns, because after all these years of of agony and whatnot, I think their last playoff appearance was when we beat them in 2010. To go 10 years without a playoff appearance, and then surprise, you get LeBron and AD and the defending champions in round one. They have every right to be furious, but to not only get that matchup in round one, but honestly, I think the two teams they matched up worst with were the Jazz and Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
And they avoid them until the Western Conference Finals. We've talked, Denver without Jamal Murray is just not nearly as terrifying, even though Michael Porter Jr. has been incredible since Murray went down. But I'm not nearly as worried about that team without Jamal Murray. So again, I don't want to be old takes exposed or anything, but like the way this shook out, considering that the Lakers probably were never going to make it out of the play-in game, I don't know that it could have shaken out better, assuming that they beat the Warriors on Wednesday.
Yeah, and I want to clarify that I'm not treating Wednesday's game, or like if the Lakers win on Wednesday, the Sun series as guaranteed wins, because one, I think that's dumb. They're in the position they're in for a reason. The Suns aren't a second seed by any fluke. I also think that's just kind of boring to approach every game or series like, you know, the Lakers are so much better than the other team. It's like a guarantee that they're going to win. Maybe that's true. But as a fan, I want to watch entertaining games. And, you know, I think this Warriors game, and hopefully, you know, that Sun series will be exactly that. I don't know about you, but I am just so much more excited for this postseason than I was last year.
I mean, I don't know, because last year I was just begging to have NBA games back. I just badly wanted any sporting events back. I don't want to like pile on Phoenix here, but like I think a large part of their success is that they just never had guys out, especially their important ones, which I mean, I don't mean that as a bad thing. That means that they have a ton of chemistry built that a lot of other teams don't have. Even in their first year with Chris Paul and whatnot, like they've relative to the rest of the league, they've gotten a lot of minutes together. So that would be the biggest challenge. Looking at that Phoenix team would just be the amount of minutes that they've played together. But when you're talking about, to kind of bring this back to Wednesday, if you're talking about players that have played together, like Steph and Draymond, like I don't know that anybody has a better understanding of each other's games than those two. The Pelicans played them three times in the final eight games, so I watched them a bunch. And those two have it down perfectly with those dribble handoffs. Draymond knows when to fake it, when the defense overplays and get to the rim. And in a one-game series, like, weird things can happen. So in that sense, you should be, worried, but aware, I guess, is what the Lakers should be, which, I mean, I don't need to tell them to be aware of Steph and Draymond, basically. But yeah, they're coming. I guess the rest of the Warriors may not have all that chemistry because it's just a lot of other guys, basically. But it's going to have to be a very disciplined approach, which I think is one of the ways I would positively describe the Lakers last postseason was disciplined. They knew the game plan and they executed it to perfection almost every time through the Western Conference. And then there was just a couple hiccups in the finals, but I mean, obviously nothing big. So, I mean, yeah, looking at the minutes, the Phoenix starting five has played the most minutes together by some margin of any five-man lineup. So that's going to be their biggest strength, is just the cohesiveness that they're going to have. So it's going to be interesting. But, yeah, ultimately I think that these two, or this playing game and first round, for now, knock on wood, Donald takes expose me. I don't think it could have played out better for the Lakers.
Moving away from the Lakers, I want to do this before we head out of here. Predictions for the other play-in games in both conferences. So the other one is Grizzly Spurs. Yeah, Pacers Hornets and Celtics Wizards. Let's start Pacers Hornets because that is a team you follow closely.
Man, the Hornets have completely run out of gas, and the Pacers hate their head coach. So I guess who will self-combust less is a matter. As much as I would like the Hornets to win, it's really hard to pick them right now because they are struggling. So for now, I think the Pacers will probably win that game.
You got Celtics Wizards. I mean, other than Jaylen Brown, and I think we're looking at their injury report the other day, Tristan Thompson's out with some chest injury. I don't know. But the Wizards just figured it out towards the end of the season, figured out how to make Westbrook and Beal work. I would like to pick the Wizards. I don't know if they will win for sure, but if there's anything I'd like to see, it is Russell Westbrook just going like full Tasmanian devil against the Boston Celtics and willing the Washington Wizards to the seventh seed in the Western Conference to play Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets. I'm here for it. Give it to me immediately.
Yeah, I'm not going to pick the Celtics. But the one concern I have is Bradley Beal was very clearly not 100% against the Hornets, and they couldn't really take advantage of it. That hamstring was very much bothering him. I think the Celtics are
frauds.
Well, yeah, and they're also dead men walking. Like, they just want the season to be done with.
Right.
I'm not going to back a team that just looks like out on their feet, basically. So I would take the Wizards in that game. Russ has been incredible. Like, him getting the triple-double record was really dope. I know that analytics Twitter doesn't care about triple-doubles anymore. Russ's career has just been wild. Like, he went from, like, underrated with the Thunder early on to, like, overrated. I know that MVP award a lot of people look back on and kind of, I don't want to say regret, but it isn't fondly looked back on by a lot of kind of neutrals. So now I think he's honestly underrated again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just like a force of nature. And during that fourth quarter Sunday against the Hornets, he realized that Beal wasn't healthy. Beal did not play well. And he was just like, all right, I'm just attacking the rim every time. And he had about 3, 4, 5 possessions in a row where he just drew fouls, went to the line, and just kept knocking shots down. I don't know who's going to guard him. If Beal's healthy, that's going to be a brutal matchup for the Celtics without Jaylen Brown now. I'm trying to match up against both those guys. So I will never pick the Celtics. So I will take the Wizards on that one.
The last one is Grizzly Spurs, and although I understand that whoever wins that series will probably lose to the Warriors in the next play-in game, I think I'll have to take the Spurs in that one. I think I just like their roster a little more.
Have you looked at the Spurs through the lap since, like?
Oh yeah, I'm fully aware. I don't know who is injured on their team right now, but I mean, if it's them at full, I don't know. I just really like the players on their roster. Like, I think Keldon Johnson's cool. I think DeJounte Murray's cool. So, yeah, maybe it's not the smart choice, but it's the one my heart wants me to make. In terms of injuries, looks like they're missing Trey Lyles and Derek White's out for the season. So, I don't know. We'll see. I'm probably going to be wrong. And again, it doesn't matter because the Warriors are probably going to win the next game anyway. Or the Lakers. You never know.
The Spurs were 31-29 on April 26th and then went 2-10 in their next 12 games to end the season. They literally did everything they possibly could to let the Pelicans and then the Kings get into the play-in game. And because they're the Pelicans and the Kings, they refused. And so the Spurs hung on to it. I think Memphis wins that. Spurs, again, look like another team that are, like, dead on their feet, basically. I know they had the COVID outbreak earlier in the season, but I would take the Grizzlies. And then we literally saw today what happens when the Warriors play the Grizzlies.
God, I can't believe we're here already. That'll do it for this week's show. Next week, I'm not familiar with the playoff schedule this year, I'm being honest with you, but I think if the Lakers win their play-in game, they will have played their first actual playoff game by the next time we talk, assuming we record on Sunday. That is insane to me. I hope they win their play-in game. I believe the play-in tournament ends on the 21st. So, I mean, that sounds right. We might even be doing a post-game show.
Yeah, I can't remember. I had it pulled up earlier. I know that the first games are on Tuesday and Wednesday. Here, I have it pulled up. So Tuesday and Wednesday, then the Eastern Conference second game is on the Eastern Conference game for the 8 seed is on Thursday, and Friday is the Western Conference one. So after that, I don't know if they have the playoff schedule set in stone yet. So who knows? We may be doing a post-game show. I hope so, because it at least means the Lakers won the playing game. So, but yeah, it has been a whirlwind of a season.
And hopefully it ends in another championship. We will know in a handful of weeks. Until then, we'll catch you next week for another episode. And yeah, let's see what happens with the Lakers.